So, I will admit some perverse pleasure in meeting new people, engaging them in conversations, normal social situations, and then sooner or later, we end up with the standard discussion of what we all do for a living. And what's best is if we're in a bar or a brew pub when I break the news that I'm a pastor. Of course, it's even better if while in the bar, before they know, someone has, let's say, unleashed a few expletives, maybe aimed at the sporting event on the big screen or just normal for them usage. Watching people trying to adjust their image and act the way I think they want them to, or fall over themselves trying to apologize for their language. Yeah, like I've never used it myself. All the while, they can hardly comprehend the beer in my hand and maybe another two or three in my belly. The cognitive dissonance is almost too much for them. I do my best to try and calm them down. And for some, it's okay. For some, they forever eye me with suspicion. The only thing better in the midst of all of this, when in conversation, is if I mention my previous career as a physicist. For some people, this is even a bigger obstacle than having a beer in my hand. Much has been made about the apparent conflict between faith and science. Of course, this comes most clearly in our conversations about our notions of creation and evolution. Jesus or Darwin, right? Keep an eye, if you have not seen them, keep an eye out for the little chrome fishes on the backs of cars or vans, right? Or the footed fish that has Darwin written inside of it. And sometimes you have that footed fish eating the regular fish with Jesus. Even among, you know, educational circles, we have debates about teaching a literal seven-day creation versus the Big Bang cosmological model and the subsequent evolution of species on the Earth, or even now the intelligent design, which is really, for the most part, probably just creationism in a different disguise. And it is fascinating, and one of these days I'm going to go there. But my wife's mother lives in northern Kentucky, not all that far from the Creation Museum. I'm going to sneak out there one day. I'm not going to take the boys. But and of course, they put forward the case for creation as laid out in the Bible, precisely laid out in those opening chapters of Genesis. And of course, having been trained now as both a scientist and a pastor, I have issues. Well, I have a lot of issues. I have issues with the creationist account. I'm okay with creationists, but they're usually not okay with me. I know of the evidence that portrays the universe as billions and billions of years old, the Big Bang theory, I know basic evolutionary theory and such, and yet our culture at large remains pretty much at a standoff. Do we side with science or religion? How can we hold both? So I'm often questioned about my conflicts. Well, I don't have one. Do I have to throw away or reject any beliefs from science, or do I remain a skeptic, even though I'm in religious garb? It certainly makes people question their preconceived notions, their assumptions, and their beliefs. The dominant reading of the creation stories in Genesis is one that views the narratives as a play-by-play of what happened. Even if we don't hold it literally, there are many who see the story as a figurative tale that has resonances with the actual physical processes that took place. Well, that's good if you're talking about Genesis 1, which is the first creation story. But if you're talking about Genesis 2, it's an entirely different creature. There are two there. Tonight we heard the first one. But there in that first one, that very first verse, in the beginning God created heaven and earth. And we automatically hear beginning as a time-filled, a temporal word. The beginning, the time before which there was nothing, the time after which we have all that's being formed. Time gives us a process and a temporal framework that God works within, speaking creation into existence. Why do we read it here tonight? Why is that our first reading? In the midst of all of those readings. I mean, yeah, it's the beginning. It's the beginning. But if the creation story is about all that exists, does it really matter then in the grand scheme of salvation? Why didn't we hear, and we forgot to talk about salvation, why didn't we hear tonight the story of the fall? Why don't we hear that? I think the stories of tonight's vigil point to something else inherent in creation. What if beginning doesn't mean beginning? Okay, that doesn't sound right. But what if beginning doesn't mean beginning as we understand it as a time-filled word? That focuses us already to hear beginning as 7 days is 7 days, or seven ages, or everything gets wrapped up in the process. Maybe beginning doesn't mean beginning. After all, when we hear the verse, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom," we don't think of beginning as the temporal sense. That wisdom starts once we fear the Lord. No. Here, fear of the Lord is the basis, the foundation, the beginning of wisdom. It's a substance word here. Beginning. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. It's about substance. So when I look back on my life and think about my love of physics, I can certainly say that Mrs. Hamill's high school physics class was the beginning of my love of physics, because it was there that the foundations were laid, where I saw the world could be described in mathematical terms and we could predict what would happen in the future if, say, I cut the string of the pendulum when it was moving at a particular angle. I could tell where the ball of the pendulum would land. The ability to describe the world with such precision was the foundation, the beginning of my love of physics. Tonight, in hearing all of these stories laid before us, we also hear the substance of the beginning. That the creation of the world by God is not first and foremost about what is, but about its source and about what will be. The creation is about something bigger and better than just a world for God to dabble in, for us to kind of flounder around in. In an ancient Jewish commentary, one rabbi put forward a whole plan. 2,000 years before God created the world, he created the law. He had prepared the Garden of Eden for the just, that they might eat and delight themselves from the fruit of the trees, because they had kept the precepts of the law in this world. For the wicked, he prepared Gehenna with all of its fiery darts, because they did not observe the precepts of the law in this world. Here, God creates the future reality where Torah obedience, or not, defines our world. Then God creates, for the sake of bringing this future to reality, within what has been created, within the world we inhabit. We also heard tonight Exodus 12. For you, this will be the beginning of months. The first command given to Israel. And one 11th century rabbi says, this should be the beginning of Torah, not the creation story. This is the first command given to Israel. God gives the command to Israel to celebrate the Passover. God creates for the sake of his commandments. God has a purpose or a rationale in his creation that goes far beyond just what is. Our vigil readings step back and take the wide view for us that we might begin to see the grand scope of what we call salvation history. That is, our readings tonight look for the overarching purpose and plan that creation was brought into and thus can be made a reality for us. If we hold on to a strictly temporal play-by-play account of creation, we will constantly run into problems with physics and the way it describes the creation of the world. However, the theologian Rusty Reno points out in his commentary on Genesis, a theological reading of beginning as source and basis need not directly and primarily concern itself with modern cosmology. We can interpret Genesis with reference to the beginning out of which and for which God creates, and we need not coordinate the seven-day sequence with the complex physical processes that modern scientists think best explain the evolution of the universe. In other words, in the beginning helps us to focus on the divine purpose for creation rather than on the physical processes that gave rise to the created world. So the Jewish commentaries I quoted look at Torah obedience as the purpose for creation. But is that what the Christian reading of salvation history leads us to? No. Hearing our readings tonight, we are continually pointed to Christ. Christ, as the Son of God, as the eternal Word spoken, is the source of creation. When God speaks the world into existence, it is through the Son of God, the eternal Word. Christ seeks a fulfillment of all creation, an elevation of all that is proclaimed good in creation, despite creation's fall into sin. Christ is the project that God set in motion in the beginning. Christ is the final reality that will bring all things into the fullness of God's love. And it dawned on me tonight, after I had taken the Paschal candle and said that all time and all ages belong to Christ, and I traced the Alpha and the Omega on that candle, that Christ being Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end, in the midst of this line of thought took on a whole new meaning. Christ is the final reality. Again from Reno, the plan and purpose of God is love, and it is revealed in its fullness in Jesus Christ. As we are baptized into his body and follow his way, we participate in his truth rather than examine it as a fact or a theory. We live amid the final realization of the divine plan. Tonight is a night of great mystery. The mystery of Christ moving in the world as the Son of God from the beginning of time, urging us ever forward toward the final reality. And as Christ breaking through the bonds of death, so that we might dwell forever in the love of the Trinity. Talk about smashing assumptions and preconceived notions. Thanks be to God. Amen.